Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. And this week, I'm coming to you from the rain-drenched and hurricane-soaked lovely environs between the Ashley River and the Cooper River in Charleston, South Carolina. Join me like he does each week is the co-host of this program, Stone Lebanowitz. And Stone is coming to you from the not-so-sunshine state of Florida this week. Stone, the outer bands are hitting you. It's pouring down rain in Charleston. I wish Helene would go away, but we got a show to do, and we're going to bring it to you, y'all. Hurricane or no hurricane.
Helene sounds like one of Kevin Marshall's ex-girlfriends.
Might have been.
A crazy ex-girlfriend.
I'm an old guy, so maybe I had a Gertrude in there, you know, Trudy.
Belkis.
Maybe, but I'm very happy with the one wife that I have now named Stacy. So very nice girl, and she puts up a lot to hang out with me. A lot of games to get to from last week, Stone. Short time to get there. Let's get to it. Number one, South Dakota State, 41. Southeastern Louisiana, nothing. And Stone, we were at this game, and we might disagree here, but I thought the Lions did some good things. But they also did some things you just can't do if you want to have a shot at knocking off a number one team in the country. The special teams were not particularly good for the Lions, and that led directly to a long punt return touchdown for the Jackrabbits that got them on the board. Those are things that you just can't do against a team like that, Stone. And of the things that you just can't do to beat the number one team, Southeastern Louisiana did several of those things, didn't they?
South Dakota State's offense did not look particularly good in any facet, in any category, but the explosive plays category. They had some Kirby Voorhees runs. He had a 25-yarder, counts as an explosive run. You had an 80-yarder in that third quarter, and Mark Arnowski had a few shots down the field here and there that just ended up breaking Southeastern's back. But it's games like these, and it's different when we get to see them in person. I did mention this to you on the sideline. Before that first kickoff takes flight, South Dakota State has taken your in at least half of your playbook and thrown it out of the window. You can't run in between the tackles. There's just things that the South Dakota State team is built for and that they do really well that other teams just can't compete with. And you saw it on display again. 41-0 the final. You had some backups in the late game. I know South Dakota State is happy to get out of that one clean.
Kirby Voorhees was the story in this one, y'all. 179 yards on 5 carries. You heard that right. 179 yards on 5 carries with 3 touchdowns and a yards per carry average of 35.8. Now, he didn't win National Offensive Player of the Week, which was a matter of some discussion between the co-host of this program and I, and he won me over. He usually does, but he had a hell of a day. That's going to be one he's not going to forget for a long, long time. The South Dakota State defense was outstanding, holding the Lions to under 100 yards rushing and also holding them to under 100 yards passing. Number two, Montana State, 52, Mercyhurst, 13. Stone, the Bobcats just keep playing well, keep doing what they do. Tommy Mellott was impressive with his arm in this one. I think he's really started to develop as a passer. Now, they're not going to have 45 passing plays for him, right? But they've got 15 or 16 good plays for him that he can execute. And boy, howdy, is he doing just that.
Yeah, if you're a frequent listener to FCS Nation Radio, you know that I was not on Tommy Mellott's train for the longest time, and I was not on Cam Miller's train for the longest time as well. But I talked earlier in the season, weeks ago, Kev, about the play calling being just a tad different for these guys. You can see on early down and distances them taking shots. You can see them finishing games with more attempts than they've ever had in their career. Of course, they're older, more mature, know the playbook better. But there's a stat like this that just makes you go, huh? Like, excuse me? Quarterback Tommy Mellott threw 3 touchdown passes for the second time in his career. Tommy Mellott's been under center for a long time and has played a lot of games as a starting quarterback for the Montana State squad. For this to be the second time in his career he's done 3 touchdown passes, it kind of proves my point that I'm not a hypocrite. I'm not just jumping on this train late. These are different players this season. Tommy Mellott is impressive. He's improved as a passer. He's a lot more confident as a passer. And of course, we know what they can do on the ground and what they have going on in the trenches. This was a no contest, Kev.
Bobcats rolled up 502 yards of total offense and 52 points, like we mentioned, and just absolutely dominated Mercyhurst. That was the mission. Dominate Mercyhurst, and they sure did. Like Stone said, 3 touchdown passes for Tommy Mellott and Colson Kuhn and Scott Trey Humphrey. Well, they combined for 179 yards on the ground. Number 3, Idaho, 27. Abilene Christian, 24. Stone, as we're making our way out of the tailgate lot, back to the hotel, checking the scores, we see Idaho up 27-3. And then a few minutes later, it's 27-24, and we wonder how that happened, right? Got to the hotel, looked on ESPN+. Abilene Christian didn't quit. Give them credit. Do you think this was a case of They led the game 27-3, kind of let their foot off the gas? Or is this maybe a blueprint of how you work against that Idaho defense? Nobody else has been able to figure it out so far. You think Abilene Christian stumbled on something there in the fourth quarter?
Absolutely not. It is one of those cases where you let off the gas here. And if you're Jason Ack, what you do is in that good, bad, and ugly meeting you have when you first see the guys, or just in position meetings when you're breaking down this film, Jason Ack instructed his staff to just not show any of the third or fourth quarter because that wasn't them. That wasn't what they prided themselves on doing. It was just garbage tape, throw it in the garbage and move on. I think what you saw in the first half was more of what we're going to get moving forward. And for Idaho, yeah, you talked about it being 27-3. This Abilene Christian team had the ball with 57 seconds left down three, and they got two Vandal territory. But I think this was just a case of taking your foot off the gas. I don't see anything wrong with what Idaho did in this game. Of course, it got a little sweaty in the end. That's football.
Vandals quarterback Jack Wagner completed 18 balls for 253 yards and a couple of touchdowns in the road win for Idaho. Idaho fans, that's how you need to chalk it up. It's a road win in the FCS, and those are hard to come by. Number four, North Dakota State 41, Towson 24. Stone, the Bison led this one 31-10 late in the third quarter, but Towson, like ACU, who we talked about just a second ago, they didn't quit, and they made this a 7-point game, 31-24, with about 10 or 11 minutes left in the ball game. The Bison, well, they scored the next 10 points to ice that football game. Towson had really pushed Villanova the week before. Probably should have won the football game, missed three field goals. I think Towson is underrated, and I think NDSU kind of maybe same deal as Idaho. Well, this ball game is over, but it wasn't over for Towson. They kept fighting, and they deserve credit for that.
Yeah, I thought they did fight, and you talked about it when you look at the end of the first quarter, whether you're watching this game or just following it like we had to do. You almost thought that it was a typo, that this game was tied 3-3. Obviously, they turn on the gas, 21 points, just rip it in the second quarter. But going back and watching it, North Dakota State was fine. It was a time of possession game in that first half. Didn't have the ball as many times as they did. And when they did, they scored touchdowns. And the coolest thing to me, I love that I'm able to give Tommy Mellott the love that he deserves, not only as a quarterback, but specifically as a passer. Same to Cam Miller. I mean, he completed his first 14 pass attempts and finished the game 17-19. Obviously not super impressive when you're putting up 41 points, but regardless, it's super efficient and it's what winners do. And that's what Cam Miller's putting on display each and every week at this point. This team's 3-3-1 heading into conference play, and I think they're riding high in confidence. But to answer your question, yes, I think there are parallels between this finish and that Idaho Vandal Abilene Christian finish. Just kind of let your foot off the gas when you know your opponent is inferior.
Bison QB Cam Miller, 219 yards and a touchdown, and like Stone said, very, very efficient. And I hold in my hand the FCS Nation Radio Top 25 for Week 4. Number 1, South Dakota State Jackrabbits. Number 2, Montana State Bobcat. Number 3, the Idaho Vandal. Number 4, the North Dakota State Bison. Rounding out the top 5, South Dakota. Number 6, the Central Arkansas Bears. Number 7, the North Dakota Fighting Hawk. Number 8, UC Davis. Rising to number 9, the Montana Grizzlies. Falling to number 10, the Villanova Wildcat. Number 11 is Sacramento State. Number 12, the Mercer Bears. 13, Tarleton State. Number 14, the William and Mary Tribe. And number 15, SEMO. Rising to number 16, the East Tennessee State Buccaneers. Number 17, Illinois State. Falling to number 18, Southern Illinois. Staying steady at number 19, Rhode Island. Number 20, Wofford Terriers. Number 21, Incarnate Word. Number 22, Lamar. Number 23, Abilene Christian. Number 24, the Western Carolina Catamount. And rounding out the top 25, the Elon Phoenix. And here are the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. The National Offensive Player of the Week is DeAndre Tamarez, wide receiver from Western Carolina. Last week versus Montana, he had a day. 8 receptions, 229 yards, and a touchdown in a very hostile environment. The National Defensive Player of the Week is T.J. Moore, cornerback from Mercer. Last week versus the Citadel, 6 tackles, 1 tackle for a loss, 2 pass breakups, and a pick 6 in Mercer's impressive win at home against the Citadel Bulldogs. Congratulations to DeAndre Tamarez and T.J. Moore for being named FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. It's time for us to take a quick break. We come back, Stone and I will break down where we are and what we know so far after 4 weeks of the regular season. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You were listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. All right, it's week 5. Obviously not the halfway point of the season, but Kev, as you know, FCS fans doing what they do best, and that's acting as if the playoffs are already here. Everybody's timelines flooded with hypotheticals. This team should have won this game. And if they did win that game, they should be ranked here. All these questions fluttering around, but I do think there are maybe 4 or 5 heavy hitters that everybody seems to be asking in 100 different ways. So I am going to bring them to you because you have these answers. You are an encyclopedia. Kevin Marshall's strongest resume from this list of top 15 teams in the subdivision as we stand right now heading into week 5.
I think you have to say the Idaho Vandals, don't you? I mean, going out and hanging with the Oregon Ducks, having an FBS win over Wyoming. I would have liked for them to have kept that lead at Abilene Christian last week. But like I said in the last segment, a road win is a road win. Stone, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about South Dakota State and the things that you've seen. Now, their resume, look, how could it be stronger than it is, right? I mean, they went to Oklahoma State and competed. The Augustana game, I mean, look, that's a local game. There was no good thing to come out of South Dakota State beating them 70-3. I don't think they took it easy on them by any stretch. I think those boys from Sioux Falls just played their guts out against the Jackrabbits, and it showed. But I think you also have to look at it this way, Stone. With the Jacks, there's been some things that have just been a little off for them so far, especially the RPO passing game. Those throws that were getting hit last year are a half a beat too slow this year. And it's nitpicky to say they beat Incarnate Word by 3 touchdowns at home, and they beat Southeastern Louisiana 41-0. It seems really nitpicky to pick apart victories like that, right? But that's what we do. That's our job. Are we reading too much into what has been a pretty solid start for the Jackrabbit looking from afar? Their fans can nitpick all they want, and so can we. But I don't see a whole lot to nitpick there, but there are a couple of things, right?
Yeah, I think there have to be. The answer is yes, and it's no all at once. And when you talk about Idaho having the strongest resume, I think you're a fool not to agree with that statement. I think it's factual. I think what they've put, not on paper, but on tape, backs each other up. And then that begs the question, because you're starting to see people peg Idaho as the number one team in the country. We're not going for that. There's just no shot, not with Jack Wagner behind center. Maybe if Jack Lane jumps back into this roster and he is 2-3 times what Wagner is and they can find offense, sure. But I'm not willing to budge, and I don't think you are either with South Dakota State. Clearly, we have the Jackrabbits at number one, and until anybody proves otherwise or they lose the game that they shouldn't, there's no reason to knock them out of that position. But is South Dakota State in trouble? I think to a degree, yes. I truly do, and I think when you look at the South Dakota State team, something that they did so well last year was play arrogant offense. Because when you're a quarterback, when you're a running back like Isaiah Davis, and you have the two Yankee twins out there, and you have one of the best tight ends in the country, oh yeah, and the best defense overall in the country, you can play this style of offense saying, I know we're going to get what we want, how we want it, and precisely when we want it. And that's not the case for the South Dakota State team. When they jog out after that fair catch on kickoff return, this team doesn't know that they're going to score the football. They're playing hopeful. Mark Gronowski's not taking his drops, going through all of his progressions as if he's all that confident, because I think he knows what he has in front of him. This offensive line clearly has holes in it. The Fighting Hawk transfer didn't even take the field against Southeastern, and it showed. Of course, Kirby Voorhees had himself a day, and Amar Johnson is Amar Johnson. But this team just doesn't have that confidence, that killer mentality that you typically see, and I hope South Dakota State fans are laughing at this. And then once you're done laughing, it's going to sink in. You're like, you know what? I feel the exact same way. He's not lying. Offensively, against Southeastern, just spinning tires. There's no rhyme or reason to what they did. Mark, first down handoff, second down handoff, third down incompletion, you get off the field. You stack a few of those together, and yeah, you start to think about things a little bit. And I think, long story short, South Dakota State is starting to think about who they are and what they've done. They're not numb anymore. And for that, I think, yeah, Jack's fans, athletes in that Jack locker room should be just a tad nervous, Kev. I think if sports books opened their odds tomorrow, obviously you're going to see the top 4 dogs favored, right? It's South Dakota State, it's North Dakota State, it's Montana State, and of course, Idaho's odds are going to be in there. But I think there are other teams, especially this year. I think the subdivision is very top heavy. I'm going to throw you a team and I want to hear yours. Of course, you already know where I'm going with this. And if you've been listening for 5-6 weeks up to this point, you know exactly where I'm going with this. And that's the Central Arkansas Bears. I think just from a star power perspective, this team's really good. And of course, the rebuttal is, you know, they're not tested week by week. This team doesn't have Valley-like players. There's no beef. Sometimes you don't need it. And Lindsey Scott and Incarnate Word and G.J. Kinney at the helm of that thing, they didn't need it. It was pure finesse. And one thing that Incarnate Word didn't have that Central Arkansas does have is a top two running back in the entire country in Shon'Derrick Powell. David Walker coming off the edge, he's the best defensive player in the FCS. I think this team, because they're in Central Arkansas and typically not a team you hear about week in and week out, you don't know much about them. I'm telling you right now, here's your homework assignment. Watch a Central Arkansas football game. If you're bored at work, but on ESPN Plus, watch a few of their games back. I don't give a damn who their opponent was. You're going to watch a team who just looks like they want to win a national championship and knows they can. Kev, for you, who is that team?
Well, Stone, I'm going to go a little bit further down the top 15 this week. I don't think I'm going to have to go much further down the top 15 in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks' time to find this team. But I'm going to say the Mercer Bears. They have a hellacious defense. The quarterback can do enough to get it done with his arm, and he's a plus with his legs. Citadel was the first team all season so far to run the ball for more than 29 yards against Mercer. They have a defense that can just absolutely shut down that phase of your game and make you one-dimensional throwing the ball. And they have some guys, including our National Defensive Player of the Week from last week, who can stop you from doing that too. I think Mercer is a team that nobody is going to want to see during the playoffs. They just have to do what a lot of teams like them aren't able to do, and that is go through the SoCon unscathed. If they can do that and have a high enough seed and not have to go on the road early in the playoffs, maybe don't have to go on the road in the playoffs at all. Maybe everybody has to come to Macon, Georgia. I think Mercer has a very good shot to be one of those last four teams standing there at the end. Look out for the Mercer Bears.
Quarterfinal future. Kevin goes Mercer. I'm going Central Arkansas. We think each of those teams are going to be one of the last four standings. You heard it right here. I love the Mercer pick, Kev. I truly do. Kev, you just had something that almost flipped a switch in my brain. You talk about being a plus with your legs. DJ, Mercer quarterback, is a plus, plus, plus with his legs. And when you go back or just take a step back, even in 2024 and the 2025 season, the teams that have won national championships and year in and year out are contending for them have a quarterback and a signal caller who is plus, plus, plus with his legs. Mark Gronowski, Cam Miller, Clifton McDowell last year. Now you're looking at a Will McIlvain. I love that. I think Mercer's a great pick. I think they silently have one of the best defenses in the country. And if they had a schedule where they played a few Missouri Valley teams just sprinkled in there, they'd be more of a household name. So I think you're holding on to a really juicy number if there were futures. All right, Kev, that right there was heavy hitter. So many questions that FCS fans have right now that I think we gave answers to. When we come back, it's the preview segment, as always. So many ranked matchups around the FCS this weekend that we cannot wait to give you the deets on, give you the scoops. And yeah, of course, after that, we'll tell you who to pick and why. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Now time for the preview segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I go all over FCS Nation and preview the biggest games taking place in FCS football this week. Stone, rain's lashing the windows. The wind is really blowing outside. Hurricane Helene has really done a number on our schedule, bringing you the show like we do every week. That's dedication, just like all these teams are dedicated this week to putting on a show for you, the fans. Number one, South Dakota State is idle this week. I've always thought that was a weird thing to say, right? I mean, idle. Stone, I don't think that they're going to be just sitting around like playing cards and stuff, right? Or twiddly winks or rolling dice. You played at Southern Illinois very recently. What does a bye week really look like?
A bye week looks like a week where you get your best players healthy. That's all a bye week is. Sometimes the best players on your team, sometimes your left guard, right? This isn't public knowledge most of the time that your left guard is playing with a sprained ankle. That's priority number one for a college football head coach. It is players in training rooms. But other than that, I think it's extra time for a quarterback and his offensive coordinator, his quarterback coach, and that head coach to watch more film. It is more time to dial up your shot plays on third and one. It is time for you to get your play sheet to the way you wanted it before the season started and everything got so hectic.
Number two, Montana State is at Idaho State. Stone, we see a lot of these conferences starting to play conference games where we're really going to start to find out who they are. The chess matches really start this week with teams that know you really well. And look, Montana State and the coaching staff at Idaho State, well, Dan Hawkins on that staff with his son Cody. Cody's the head coach. They know each other very well. Not going to be a lot of secrets in this ball game. Idaho State has problems stopping the run. Montana State can really run the ball. I think Montana State probably goes to Pocatello and comes away with a pretty easy one here. But Idaho State does have some weapons, and they made a quarterback change at North Dakota that really seemed to spark their offense. Montana State needs to start fast, take the crowd out of the ball game, take Idaho State out of the ball game, and just handle their business on the road in Pocatello.
I don't think this is a close game at any point, like at any point. And I think this is also a really good spot for Montana State to obviously put a W in the column in the Big Sky and to do it on the road. For a coach, you're super happy. You get to put your guys on a plane, make them stay in a hotel room, all for a game that matters, that you're going to win by a wide margin. It's good training. It's good practice. And they're going to go four quarters, keep everybody upright, and dominate this Idaho State team. I'm excited for this one just to see what Tommy can continue to do as he just climbs the ranks statistically and through top-ranked quarterbacks in the FCS.
Number three, Idaho, is at number eight, UC Davis. I've had this one circled since week one, Stone. Big test for both teams. We've had Davis ranked a little higher than most people have. Took some criticism for it. I don't mind that. I like this UC Davis team a lot. They do a lot of things like a Valley team. Strong up front, run the football. The running back is outstanding. Just enough quarterback play to be very good. But Idaho comes in, and Stone, you have to look at what Jason Eck has done with Jack Wagner under center. Wagner can do a lot of things, but that's not who they wanted to take the snaps this year, right? They wanted Jack Lane to do it. And to still be putting up over 400 yards of offense with a guy who you didn't really want to play is impressive. They're going to need that offense, but more than anything else, they're going to need that stout defensive line and run stoppers against UC Davis, because the Aggies run the ball about as well as anybody in FCS football.
Yeah, you're damn right they do. That's where I was going to start. Don't have to anymore. You called it out. Listen, this is the test of all tests for both squads. We took so much heat. This week, putting UC Davis at number eight, specifically because they're ranked ahead of the Montana Grizzlies, right? Ruffles a lot of feathers. Ranked ahead of Villanova team, ranked ahead of a Sac State team. UC Davis, why are you guys so high on them? This, folks, right here, is an FCS Nation Radio special. This is why we do what we do, and we are as confident as we are. Watch what UC Davis does. UC Davis, of course, haven't played anybody. We get that. We know that. Obviously, you play a Cal team. An A&M Commerce team, Southern Utah, Utah Tech. I get it. Truly do. There's nothing they can do about that. Same argument goes for Central Arkansas. But just watch. Turn this tape on. This is a 10 p.m. kick on the East Coast. I'm going to be glued to my couch because I know what the Aggies can bring to the table, and they've been waiting for a team like Idaho to step in front of them. Kevin, this one is circled. The pencil circled with the pen, an Expo marker, a Sharpie. I love this one. We're going to be watching this one in tandem. I think the Aggies got a real good shot at winning this ballgame.
Number four, North Dakota State, is at number 17, Illinois State. Illinois State, Stone, kind of up and down so far, right? They've looked really good, but they also kind of struggled at times against Western Illinois. I know that's kind of a rivalry game, so maybe you expect that. But I expect a couple things out of a Brock Spack coach team. The offensive line play is going to be good, and they're going to take care of the football. Those are things that you have to do against any North Dakota State Bison team. Take care of the football and try to at least maybe break even on the line of scrimmage. You're probably not going to control the line of scrimmage against the Bison. I mean, East Tennessee State did a lot of times, but I don't think Illinois State has the same type of dynamic playmakers down the field that East Tennessee State does. Well, then again, they do have a pretty good wide receiver, don't they, Stone? Why don't you tell
right.
us just a little bit about him and what he brings to the table, but can they get him the ball enough in space to where he can make a real difference against the Bison?
Yeah, I think for the Bison's defensive staff, right, you take Daniel Sobkowitz and you put not one but two guys on him, right? You make sure he's to the boundary and you make sure you have somebody shadowing and following, because that's their biggest weapon. And of course, we've compared this Bison team to Bill Belichick's Patriots team time and time again. They typically take a team's best player out of the game. Obviously, he didn't see that against Colorado. Nothing you can do with Travis Henner. But from that game on, they've taken the best player and at least tried their very best and have had success quarter after quarter after quarter, taking the best player out of their game. So Daniel Sobkowitz is a guy who likes to line up out wide, who's a difference maker, who has a chance to flip this game upside down. And I think the only way the Redbirds have a shot, obviously, I trust and you trust that Spack can put a game plan together to obviously make this Bison team uncomfortable, because that's what it's going to take. And we saw this Towson in North Dakota State first quarter come to a close, tied at 3-3. I think for Illinois State's case, you're going to need to score early, tack that field goal on top of it early. If you don't find yourself with a 10-0 lead, this is not a ball game and it won't be close.
Number 18, Southern Illinois, is at number 5, South Dakota. Stone, one of two things going to happen in this one, friend. The Saluki quarterback is either going to really grow up quickly, which he started to do in that ball game last week against SEMO, or it's going to be a long, long day and the start of a pretty long rest of the season for the Salukis. Which train are you on this one? Is the train going for the Salukis, or is she a leaving?
I typically like to roll with my dogs. I didn't last week. I picked SEMO to win that game. They beat the Dogs, won the war for the wheel. And I think what you touched on, Hunter Simmons, the quarterback, jolted into this lineup unexpectedly. DJ Williams out, surgery. It's not a place you want to go play. You don't want to go to the Dome. And I'm not saying it's so hard to play in the Dome, but it is a Missouri Valley Football Conference road game against the top five team in the country. Even if you believe it or not, top five on paper. We're talking about the Yotes, year after year contending, and a Southern Illinois team who just lost their starting quarterback and now has a kid in his second collegiate start. I don't think Southern Illinois can survive 60 minutes with the Yotes. This one's tough, though. I think it finishes very close. I think one of these teams is getting out of here by a 5-7 point margin.
Number 22, Lamar, is at number 6, Central Arkansas. Stone, we mentioned in the segment where we kind of went through the teams and talked about them, where they are at this point in the season. And of course, you know, you mentioned one running back for Central Arkansas, but you didn't mention the other one. They got two really good ones. And that fella coming off the edge is a Sunday football player, if I've ever seen one. Lamar, pretty nice story so far, right? Nothing was really expected of them, but here they are after 4 weeks, ranked number 22 in the country. But they got to go on the stripes to Conway, Arkansas. Not a really easy place to play. You would think Central Arkansas would be able to get out of here with a W, but they got to play well. Can't read the press clippings. Got to play well every week. You're Central Arkansas. You're not going to be able to roll your jerseys out in the field and beat nobody. Got to go out and play the football game. I'm kind of confident that the Bears will get it done at home.
Yeah, I'm confident as well. I think they blow Lamar out. Poor Lamar. They've shown a lot of good things this season. There's a lot to look forward to, but what you're not looking forward to is seeing David Walker come off the edge. What you're not looking forward to is watching Shunderrick Powell put his foot in the turf and go 75 lickety split. The Central Arkansas team needs to start finding ways to come out with energy in the first quarter, and people are going to start realizing that this team is a legit contender.
Number 9, Montana, is at Eastern Washington. Stone, historically, the Grizz have not fared well over there on the turf that's as red as the devil's dangler. But this is not the same Eastern Washington team, not the same Eastern Washington program from 2020, 2021, 2019. It's just not. The Grizz should probably be able to go over there and handle the Eagles, run the football, play some defense. I think last week giving up that many points to a Western Carolina team said more that Western Carolina's got their stuff in a pile offensively, which was the question that we had going into that ball game, more so than Montana's not going to be able to stop anybody all year. So I mean, the Grizz go on the road here, probably get a pretty comfortable victory. Well, comfortable for this series. Maybe some other people would be uncomfortable with a 12, 13-point road win in conference against a team you've never fared well at their place before. But that's kind of what I expect out of this one.
Yeah, Montana's going to beat the brakes off of Eastern Washington here, and it's a spot where, brace yourself, Montana fans are going to be all over Twitter sending winky face emojis. I told you so. Do you believe in us now? Do you want to move us higher than 9 now? It's Eastern Washington. They've gotten beaten up pretty bad a few times this season already. This is a game that they should win by 20-plus, and I think they do so, but similar to Central Arkansas, both of their opponents, I don't think, give us a good gauge of their level, where they should be ranked, and where they are in the trajectory of winning a national championship. This is just another week in the office for these guys.
LIU is at number 10, Villanova. Stone, LIU hasn't won, but in their FCS games, they've been within a score of every team. I'm just waiting for Villanova to have a breakout game and put some crooked numbers on the board. We're going to week five, and I'm wondering if this is going to be something I'm going to be still waiting for come week eight and come week nine. At some point, this is just who you are offensively, and then you got to deal with that and try to play a bit more defense and play those type of games. I'm afraid that Villanova may just not have the firepower offensively this year to go where they thought they could go in the preseason.
Right on. It's a firepower. It's an arsenal thing. I don't think they have it. Connor Watkins does not turn the ball over. He's yet to this season, and he does move the chains with his legs really well. As far as taking shots down the field, he's confident doing so. But stringing throws and 8, 9, 10 play drives with 5, 6 passes mixed in there is not something he's accustomed to. But it's a team like LIU where you can get those reps. It's a team like LIU where you can try out some of those plays that looked good in camp, that looked good in week one, plays that Connor can call himself. They do need a breakout game, Kev. And if they don't have that breakoff game, we're going to continue to have questions because they're not tested. And they don't seem like they're going to get tested for the rest of the season. Obviously, they lost the Maryland Terps last week. And me and you pegged it. They played really well. But this is an LIU team that you have to beat up on that's winless. It's family weekend. It's a 6 p.m. kick. I think Connor Watkins has to explode here. We need to see at least 400 yards total offense if we want to move Villanova up.
Number 11, Sacramento State is at Northern Arizona. So Northern Arizona was atrocious in the red zone last week. Like, the numbers are so bad that they don't really even bear repeat, okay? And Sac State, you want to talk about, well, being kind of untested. Well, I mean, they had the two FBS games and then two lesser FCS opponents. So, you know, who is Sac State? Well, the walk-up Sky Dome is also a notoriously hard place to come out with a W from. It is a way up there in the sky. The elevation is so high up there, Stone, that if there were a whole bunch of trees around, you would have thought I was a hippie when I was there. Because, brother, I was looking for a tree to hug just to catch my breath, all right? Maybe one too many heaters might have something to do with that, too, but
just maybe.
But still, this Northern Arizona team is a team that could hurt Sac State in that building, and it wouldn't shock me if that's exactly what happened.
Just because it makes no sense, right? This is just going to be one of those games. Sac State has looked so good, and they're going to stumble out of the gates here and find themselves down 7-3 at halftime. It's going to be one of those wacky ones, I think. I agree. NAU is a weird place to play. I will say, all things go right. Similar to what I talked about with Central Arkansas, you come out firing. You get the man with the plan, Eli Tolliver, to get going. He's got 422 on the season, found pay dirt 3 times, obviously 4 games, and he catches the ball really well out of the backfield, and they trust him coming out of the backfield.
On the road, at Wofford, who's done nothing but win and compete in close losses to ranked teams this year. This is one of those weekends, if you're the Mercer Bears, and you have your sights set on doing better in the playoffs than you did last season, this is one you just got to have, brother. You got to go to Spartanburg, and you've got to take what you believe is yours. And I think Mercer has a very good opportunity to do that because of the running game and because of the quarterback. Look, Wofford is a very good football team this year. I think Mercer has a shot to be a great football team this year. If they want to get to where they believe they can, just win, baby, by one. Any way that you can do it. You got to go on the road into SoCon, go to Spartanburg, and beat the Wofford Terriers.
The theme of our show, when the Mercer Bears are mentioned, is what, Kev?
Defense.
The defense is too damn good. The defense is just too damn good.
Number 16, East Tennessee State is at the Citadel. Stone, this will be the ball game I'm at this week. Looking forward to being with all my Bulldog faithful and friends and family this week down there at the General. I hope we enjoy the football game. I think we might not. But I know this, friend. The Citadel will look like a football team, and they'll fight, and it'll be close for a long time. Some things need to go the way of the cadets in this one for them to pull out a victory. Need a pick six. Need something special in the special teams and need to be able to stay on the field on offense and keep the defense rested so that fourth quarter is something that they can be proud of and not with their hands on their hips, gasping for breath in the 90% humidity, 12 noon kickoff start in Charleston. Hope springs eternal with me when we're talking about the Citadel Bulldogs. I think this will be a football game. I think the Dogs will hang around and make it one.
Big blue machine. Big blue machine.
And on that note, it's time for us to take a quick break. Stone Labanowicz is getting a raise, And when we come back, Stone Labanowitz will update you on the standings about how much money has been raised so far to help end childhood cancer through our partnership with Alex's Lemonade Stand and Northwestern Mutual. And following that will be the pick segment. I know you'll want to hang out for that. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You were listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. All right, as you guys know, each and every week, we give you guys updates on where we stand and what's new in our fight against childhood cancer. Of course, this entire thing led by Northwestern Mutual alongside Alex's Lemonade Stand and the foundation that's done so much and has impacted thousands upon thousands of families affected by childhood cancer. Like I said, I wanted to give you guys an update and a recap because myself, Kevin Marshall, we were in southeastern Louisiana last weekend for the Line Up for Lemonade tailgate event to highlight Jet Booker, one of our athletes, one of our honorary captains of a few weeks ago. His Southeastern Louisiana Lions took on South Dakota State, but the tailgate that took place beforehand was phenomenal. Thank you so much, fans of FCS Nation, for showing up and showing out, showing your face and helping us raise money and awareness for the cause. So many of you guys took part in the hashtag Lemon Top Challenge. So easy to do. You balance a lemon on your head, you tag at @NM_financial, at Alex's Lemonade, and your school's hashtag. Again, just a picture of you balancing a lemon on your head, and Northwestern Mutual donates $10 for every Lemon Top Challenge. Just think about it. For the thousands of you guys out there listening right now, for the thousands of you guys driving at this very moment, it's that simple. You guys combine forces, and you can really make a difference in children's lives and parents' lives whose children are affected by childhood cancer. Like I said, the Lemon Top Challenge, for each participant in each social media post with hashtag Lemon Top Challenge, and if you can tag Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade, $10 gets donated. Just think about if everybody came together and participated in the challenge, how easy and how much money we'd raise. I talked about us being in Louisiana last weekend, showing support for Jet Booker, wide receiver, honorary captain for not only us, but the Lions as well. He's in the lead right now, folks. I told you I was going to give you guys an update. Jet Booker with a little under $400 so far, right behind him, Mark Gronowski, behind him, Aiden Bauman, and Bo Belquist, right behind Aiden. About $1,000 has been raised, and we are 4 weeks through the season. Guys, we need you. We need you to step up. There are a few things that I have that I would consider new news that I want you guys to, if you're driving, pull over, grab a pen, and write this down. And if you're at home or you're in the gym, I need you to sit down. You got to hear this. I say it all the time. You hear it all the time. Honorary captain of the week, right? Of our list of 12 athletes, those right there, those guys, they're our honorary captains of the week. But for you, the fans, we want one of you guys to be an honorary captain. We are now giving FCS Nation an opportunity to be Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand honorary fan of the year. The criteria? It's simple. Make the most impact. I see so many of you guys donating to the cause for each of your team's victories. I love it. Do more of that. Get more people involved. For you, the fan, we are going to be counting the number of Lemon Top challenges that you make happen. In my opinion, it's going to be obvious who this honorary fan of the year is. It's going to be so obvious. You're going to be boisterous on Twitter. You're going to be boisterous at these tailgates, getting people to participate in the Lemon Top challenge or getting people to donate, family members, people that you know that have been affected and whose children have been affected by childhood cancer. Make an impact and become the honorary fan of the year. Northwestern Mutual will donate $1,000 in your name to the cause. $1,000. And oh yeah, something else I wanted to add. For every $5,000 that is donated to one of our athletes, the Northwestern Mutual Foundation will tack on an extra $1,000 on top of all of it. So just think about it. If you can raise $30,000 for one of these athletes, the foundation, the Northwestern Mutual Foundation, puts in another $6,000. That's big time. That would motivate me. For those of of you out there, if it's your first time listening, or you're just now getting to know me and Kevin Marshall, and this is your first time listening to the show, well, now's the time to get involved. You can join our fight against childhood cancer by just being a good person. Let me just boil it down to that. We want to give FCS Nation an opportunity to become the Northwestern Mutual and Alex Lemonade Stand Honorary Fan of the Year. Call it a fan captain. Kind of sounds better. Just make an impact, whether it's with donations, exposure, posts on social media. We're going to nominate a list of fans at the end of the year, and of course, we're going to end up with a captain. I think for you guys, it's an opportunity to hold your business or your name on a pedestal. Shine a light. Highlight them. We all know the power of social media, so I want everybody getting involved in this. If you have celebrities that run in your circle, if you have powerful people who align themselves with initiatives like this, get them involved. We need them. These children need them, and our athletes want you to donate to them in their school so they can win the ultimate prize, the Lemon Trophy, the thing that 12 athletes are competing for. Of course, they're competing for national championships, but for some of them, that dream won't come true. But a dream that can is them winning the Lemon Trophy for raising the most money and the most awareness for Alex's Lemonade Stand and the Foundation and kids fighting childhood cancer. Guys, stay tuned for more Honorary Captain of the Week interviews. We're going to be bringing on athletes, managing partners of offices, and Northwestern Mutual all over the country. We cover the West. We cover the North. We cover the South. We cover the East. We cover every square inch of the country, and we're dependent on the fans. FCS Nation, now is your chance. A few accounts that I want you guys to follow before we jump to a break. And of course, when you come back, it's going to be the pick segment. So you're not going to want to miss that. Follow us at FCS Nation Radio 1 on X, on Twitter, whatever you call it. Follow Northwestern Mutual at @NM_financial. And please, please, please follow Alex's Lemonade Stand at Alex's Lemonade on X, on Twitter, all over Instagram, Facebook, wherever you can find them, wherever you're active. They're there. So are we. We exist. And if you have any questions, the DMs are always wide open. Our emails are all over our website at FCSNationRadio.com. Come find me. I'm Stone Labanowitz, my co-host Kevin Marshall. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Now time for my favorite time of the week, the pick segment. This is where Stone Labanowitz and I pick the biggest games taking place this week in FCS football. Up first, number 2, Montana State is at Idaho State. Stone Labanowitz, who you got? Bobcats at Bengals.
I got Bobcats, a lot to a little, 49-16 the finish.
I agree with you on this one, friend. Take number 2, Montana State on the road against Idaho State in Pocatello, 42-7. Number 3, Idaho is at number 8, UC Davis.
This is the one right here. This is the one. I'm hanging my hat on this pick. I'm putting my reputation on the line here. Give me the Aggies for the upset special of the week. I expect this line to get pumped out like 8, 9.5. Almost a double-digit favorite. It's not flying. It's not flying. Give me the Aggies, 27-21 upset special of the week, the way of Mr. Stone Labanowitz.
Not me, sir. Look, I'm a big believer in UC Davis. I don't think this loss hurts them, but I do believe that they will lose. Take number 3, Idaho, on the road over UC Davis, 28-27. Number 4, North Dakota State is at number 17, Illinois State.
Yeah, North Dakota State's going to win this ball game. 30-17 is what I have jotted, but I hope that I'm wrong. And I hope this scoreline finishes a lot closer than that.
Nobody circles the wagons like that fellow with the cowboy mustache. And that fellow, Brock's back. He'll have a game plan this week. He's got some horses up front, but I still don't think it'll be enough. Take number 4, North Dakota State, on the road over number 17, Illinois State, 38-31. Number 18, Southern Illinois, is at number 5, South Dakota.
I think both of these teams trade leads through 60 minutes. Momentum is going to go the way of the Salukis. The momentum is going to come back the way of the Yotes. But I think, like I said in the preview segment, I don't think the Salukis have it in the tank. And I don't think Hunter Simmons can go the distance here with a team like South Dakota with a bunch of veterans on the roster. Give me the Yotes, 28-20. In a very good ball game.
I agree with you on this one, Stone. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be a four-quarter ball game, but I think the Yotes get it done at home. Take number 5, South Dakota at home over number 18, Southern Illinois, 21-17. Number 22, Lamar, is at number 6, Central Arkansas.
I like Central Arkansas here, and I like them by a lot. 40-17, Lamar gets bounced out of the top 25.
I agree with you on the pick. I think it'll be closer than that, but I like Central Arkansas at home on the stripes in Conway, Arkansas, to beat number 22, Lamar, 35-17. Murray State is at number 7, North Dakota.
This is a patented Fighting Hawk victory here, 30-7. Murray State just don't got it. The Hawks do.
Murray State, Stone, I was higher on them in the preseason than a lot of people. They have some players. They just need something to bring it all together, and I do believe it'll happen this year, but it ain't happening this week. Take number 17, North Dakota, at home in the Alaris Center in Grand Forks, North Dakota. Fighting Hawks win, 38-10. Number 9, Montana, is at Eastern Washington.
Yeah, give me the Grizz, 35-10. This has got to be a game where Hauk figures out what his offense's identity is, and I hope it's this game. Eastern Washington is the opponent you want to beat up on and get good reps, be confident while doing so. I think the Grizz win big here.
I agree with the pick, but again, I think it'll be a closer ball game. That's a tough place to play over there on that red turf. But take number 9, Montana, over Eastern Washington on the road in Cheney, 28-17. LIU is at number 10, Villanova.
Give me Villanova, 40-14. Let's go, Watkins. Pick it up.
I think Villanova, this is the week where they get it together on offense, get their stuff in a pile, and it shows. Take Villanova at home over LIU, 31-10. Number 11, Sacramento State, is at Northern Arizona.
Sneaky good game here. Give me the Hornets squeezing out of this one, 27-24. Ball game will be tied in the fourth quarter, I think. It's going to come down to a last-second drive. It's a make-or-miss field goal. And I think, all in all, Sacramento State wins this game.
I disagree. This is my upset special of the week. Oh! Stone. Take Northern Arizona at home over number 11, Sacramento State, 24-23.
Oh!
Number 12, Mercer, is at number 20, Wofford.
Give me the Bears, 17-14. This one also, sneaky good game. Love it, but Mercer wins this thing.
Take number 12, Mercer, on the road in Spartanburg, South Carolina, over number 20, Wofford, 24-17. Southeastern Louisiana is at number 13, Tarleton State.
This is another upset special of the week. Ring the bell. Give me the Lions. Hashtag line up. I think Southeastern wins this ball game somehow, some way, 28-24 in what is another really good game this weekend.
I don't think that, sir. I think Tarleton's going to hand the ball off and try to duplicate exactly what happened in front of our own two eyes last week in Hammond, Louisiana, at their place, and I believe they'll be somewhat successful doing it. Take number 13, Tarleton State, at home over Southeastern Louisiana, 27-17. Number 16, East Tennessee State, is at the Citadel.
Whew, I've been thinking long and hard about this one. I'm going with the Buccaneers here, 21-7, in a low-scoring affair. Give me ETSU. Sorry, Kev.
Look, Stone, I picked the Citadel last week in the upset special of the week. Didn't work out. And we all know there ain't no education in the second bite of a rattlesnake. So take number 16, East Tennessee State, on the road in Charleston at the General over to Citadel in a close one. Field goal decides this one, I think, 27-24. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. Produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. I'd like to invite all of y'all right back here next week for another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.